And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and your recycled paper handy. And we're going to get right into our commentary as we start off the second half of our show with commentary every week. This commentary is from the Christian Science Monitor. It's written by Norman Mayers of the Oxford University in England, and the title is Subsidizing Environmental Damage. Here we go. The typical American pays as much as $2,000 per year in taxes to fund government subsidies that undercut the nation's economy and trash the environment. With the presidential campaign full tilt, it is perfect timing for voters who have just filled out their annual tax returns to fully understand where some of their taxpayer dollars are going and why. Washington subsidizes excess food production and then pays again to store the surplus. Agricultural subsidies also foster overloading croplands, leading to topsoil erosion, pollution from synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, and release of greenhouse gases. In 1998, the United States subsidies averaged around $20,000 per farmer, costing each consumer an average of over $300 more for food. In 1996, the U.S. subsidies averaged $27,240 per farmer, costing each consumer an average of $260 more for food. Even with the recent increase in prices at the pump, gasoline in the U.S. is still cheaper than bottled water, thanks to myriad subsidies. What economists call the full social cost of gasoline, including traffic congestion, road accidents, and pollution, is estimated to be at least $5 per gallon. Moreover, gasoline subsidies create an energy policy by default that is the opposite of the government's priorities, prolonging dependence on foreign oil, discouraging investments in cleaner technologies. Traffic congestion delays cost at least $100 billion, with a B, dollars per year. Pollution levies health and other costs that may well run as high as $150 billion a year. Fossil fuels, not just oil, but coal and natural gas, are also heavily subsidized, whereas they should be heavily taxed, if only because such impacts as acid rain, urban smog, and global warming. As a measure of how economically efficient it is to curb fossil fuels, the U.S. Clean Air Act produced net direct savings averaging $1.1 trillion, that's with a T, dollars a year from 1970 to 1990, yet subsidies mean that scarce investment is wasted on capital-intensive energy projects when it is far cheaper to simply save energy. Were fossil fuels to be shorn of all their subsidies, they'd face the discipline of the marketplace. Coal would compete with solar energy, wind power, and other clean and renewable energy. With the same subsidies it provides fossil fuels, the alternatives would be commercially competitive. Government subsidies are also at the root of much misuse of water supplies that are increasingly scarce in many areas of the U.S., including and particularly the wheat fields over the Oglala Aquifer, and thus threaten the future agricultural economy. Consequences of subsidies for commercial fishing include overfishing and commercial extinction of fish stocks, which have led to huge bankruptcies and unemployment, as well as higher fish prices for consumers. Subsidies in just the five sectors listed total at least $300 billion per year, or one-fifth of all such subsidies worldwide. They distort the economy as well as lay waste to the environment. Why are they tolerated? Because special interest groups that pay heavily into campaign election finances come knocking for a payoff when the voters have done the job. There are at least 100 special interest lobbyists per member of Congress in Washington, and they spend $100 million monthly on their activities. Now that Americans have filed their tax returns for the year, they should think forward to another significant day, November 7th, when they will cast their presidential votes. Which candidate is serious about reforming election funding? There are a few measures that could do more for the economy as well as the environment than to eliminate these subsidies. And once again, this was called Subsidizing Environmental Damage, written by Norman Mayers of Oxford University in England, and was printed in the Christian Science Monitor April 17th of this year. Back into more activist news. Some of you heard about the tree sit in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Well, the tree sitter's name is Mary Lightheart. She's a 53-year-old grandmother. She's in a platform built into a 225-year-old plus post oak, smack dab in the middle of where they want to build a Kohl's department store. The tree sit started May 2nd after a lengthy battle with City Hall, CMN, and Argus developers from North Carolina who want to put a Kohl's and a Target store and a bunch of other stuff right where a patch of 89 old-growth hardwoods and 111 younger hardwoods reside in a rare Ozark prairie forest ecosystem. It's even in town. There are two separate nesting red-tail hawks and migrating waterfowl there as the small rainy season wetlands are in parts of the 300 acres surrounding the trees. I've got some phone numbers here. I want to tell you before you call that CMN Developers has denied access to the tree sit, including delivery of food, water, and medicine, by using armed security guards and calling the Fayetteville Police Department to arrest trespassers. Please tell them to obey the Fayetteville Tree Ordinance, which requires rare trees over 24 inches in diameter to be saved from the saw, and they are currently proceeding with their plans to chop down 70 of the 89 rare trees on the property. Unfortunately, with the consent of the City Council and the Mayor of Fayetteville, and it's not very polite to starve out 53-year-old grandmothers either. The CMN lawyer's phone number is 501-751-6464. The name is Michelle Harrington. Once again, the number is 501-751-6464. Kohl's Incorporated, the big store, is 262-703-7000. That's 262-703-7000. Or how about Senator Kohl's office in Wisconsin? He owns the thing. His office number, 1-800-247-5645. That's 800-247-5645. Give the senator a call. Ask him what he's doing to protect trees in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Not very much, I suppose. And, of course, the mayor of Fayetteville, his home number, 501-443-4980. See, we rock 'em and sock 'em here on Earth First Radio. The home number of the mayor of Fayetteville, Arkansas, 501-443-4980. Call him now and call him often. All right. More news about Fayetteville. Ginny Masulu walked past a no trespassing sign and onto the construction site of CMN Business Park 2 on Monday. That would be the 15th of May, toting two bags of groceries and daring Fayetteville police to arrest her. They did. The 51-year-old Fayetteville resident became the first demonstrator arrested as part of the ongoing tree preservation protest at Steel Crossing, a shopping center development surrounded by the CMN construction site. As cameras rolled and reporters watched, Masulu made an attempt to take groceries and medicine to Mary Lightheart, the protester who was living in the tree for the last 13 days. And that's as of Monday. She's up to about 18 days now. I'm aware I'm making a nonviolent statement of civil disobedience, Masulu told reporters before she walked toward Lightheart's perch. I feel so strongly about this issue that I'm willing to break the law that I would normally respect. Fayetteville police took her without handcuffs to the Fayetteville City Jail. Whenever it doesn't happen around here, you never get arrested without getting handcuffed around here. Booked her on a misdemeanor charge of criminal trespass. Let her go. However, Lightheart got her groceries. About 5 p.m., Diane Rivers filled a bag with roasted chicken, cheese, crackers, bananas, and orange juice and took it to Lightheart and a supporter who's staying with her. The security guard at the site told her she was trespassing and that he'd call the police, so Rivers hurriedly dropped off the food and left before the police arrive. And in other Fayetteville news, there have been four people arrested so far. This is as of today, the 18th of May. The mayoral candidate Subrutu Lahari, who is the director of the Gandhi Memorial International Foundation, was arrested once, released, and went back and was arrested again. He's currently in jail until his arraignment tomorrow. There were three other people arrested. We heard about two of them. One of them was a local journalist who was attempting to interview Mary Lightheart using his First Amendment rights to free press, but apparently property rights are more important than the Bill of Rights, and he was taken to jail. If you want more information, call 501-582-1682. Ask for Jason. That's 501-582-1682. And I've got a cell phone number for Mary Lightheart. I haven't had time to give her a call yet, but we may do that and get it on the show next week if she's still there. There's an Albion Treesit, the group that started the original Luna Treesit, made famous by Julia Butterfly, has begun another one in the Albion, and I did make a phone call to ask about this Treesit. It started out on the first lunar eclipse of this year in a 220-acre THP in Mendocino County. There's a tree gypsy and a cargo net up. The Mendocino Redwood Company's chief forester, Mike Janai, claims that there's no marbled murrelets there, but recent studies have found not only marbled murrelets, but spotted owl and rare plant species. And the tree set has, in the last few days, expanded across the creek. There are some traverses between the two different tree sets. Now they're on both sides of the creek. And this is a very steep area. So, and they're spawning fish in the stream. There are currently five people up in the tree, and there's a revolving core of folks. They need help with money and tarps. So if you can help them out, call 707-937-5703. That's 707-937-5703. If you want to send them stuff like money or tarps, send it to the tree sit. P.O. Box 702, Mendocino, California, 95460. You could put Beth on there, too. Beth at P.O. Box 702, Mendocino, California, 95460. All right, that's just one of a number of tree sits still up. Mr. Mazden is still up in Northern California. Eagle Creek is up. Fall Creek, I don't know if they're still up. We've got more news about that coming up in a minute. North American Earth Liberation Front Press Office has received the following anonymous communique claiming responsibility for sabotage of genetically engineered trees in eastern Oregon. In early March, a potlatch hybrid poplar tree plantation in eastern Oregon was targeted for its role in genetic engineering trees for pulpwood. Around 300 saplings were targeted and killed, and extensive damage was done to irrigation systems which pump toxic fertilizers into the ground. The action was taken due to the increasing tide of genetic manipulation that is infiltrating every nook and cranny of the natural world. We cannot allow this to continue. These corporations will alter thousands of years of evolution and destroy the biodiversity that sustains our planet simply to make a profit. Until this madness stops, we will continue to hit them where it hurts in their pocketbooks because money is the only thing that they will listen to. Earth Liberation Front actions in Belgium. Revolt of the guinea pigs. On Sunday, May 7th, during the afternoon, and this for the first time in Belgium, 200 persons uprooted transgenic canola and maize plants, according to belonging to TNC Monsanto, in its experimental farm of Frank Werrett in the south of Belgium. A festival of resistance to genetically modified organisms held on that day started in the morning with a conference hosted by some folks and some other folks. We won't know who these are, but then the crowd gathered for an organic picnic at the farm of Vevey Veron, and the crowd gathered into a colorful seeds party and walked joyfully to the experimental center of Monsanto, where they entered the field and destroyed several parcels of maize and canola while the rock band René Benamé was playing on a truck behind. Now, that's what I got to call one great crop pull. Have a truck with a band on it playing. Oh, man. This nonviolent collective action we wish to relay in Belgium is the growing international resistance to the imposition of transgenic exploitation on Earth. You want more information? Send email to intercage, I-N-T-E-R-C-A-G-A, at voila, that's V-O-I-L-A, dot frintercage, F-R-I-N-T-E-R-C-A-G-E, at voila.fr. Once again, intercage, at voila.frintercage, F-R-I-N-T-E-R-C-A-G-E, at voila.fr. I think there's too many ats in there, but what the hell. Give it a try. Maybe you can figure something out. Stop the bombs. Earth First activists have scaled the World's Fair globe in downtown Knoxville, Tennessee. They began their ascent early Sunday morning. I guess that's a couple of weeks ago. Deployed the banner around midday. They're taking action to bring light to the United States government's global hypocrisy on nuclear weapons. The U.S. urges other countries to disarm but makes no real effort to do so itself. Here's some statements from the activists. Our species has to outgrow the suicidal course of nuclear weapons, said Chris Irwin, a sixth-generation Knoxvillian. And nuclear weapons work at Y2, that's the site in Tennessee, poisons the ground we live on, endangers work, community health, and undermines world peace. We must stop the bomb, says Dane Cuppinger of Asheville, North Carolina. And, of course, this is an action by Katua Earth First. If you want more information, 865-633-8483. Grass Valley. At a rally in Grass Valley, California, citizens from throughout Northern California called upon Sierra Pacific Industries to reform its aggressive forest practices. That took place Thursday the 18th. The concerned citizens who came here from Nevada City, Arnold, Chico, Etna, and other towns said their communities were in shock from Sierra Pacific Industries' dramatic acceleration of clear-cutting on its lands and expressed outrage at the California Department of Forestry sanctioning such environmentally destructive projects. Rally participants, accompanied by a 12-foot-tall puppet, including Logzilla and the Sierra Pacific Industries Timber Baron, made their way to SPI's local office to deliver a list of requested reform. The event was the first large public protest of Sierra Pacific Industries. Quote, Sierra Pacific Industries is the Logzilla of California. The company is on a clear-cutting rampage, thrashing its way through forests, terrifying communities, and leaving behind a ravaged landscape that looks like something out of a B-movie monster flick, said Brian Vincent, California organizer for the American Lands Alliance in Nevada City, California. More information at wafcca@nccn.net. That's wafcca@nccn.net. Or you can call Brian. His number, 530-265-3506. That's 530-265-3506. And activists occupy the Morgan Monroe State Forest office in a protest of a timber sale program. This past Tuesday, May 16th, five activists from the Buffalo Trace Earth First occupied the Morgan Monroe State Forest office in a nonviolent protest of the timber sale program of the state forest system. They vowed to stay until the DNR agreed to end the timber sale program. Well, it didn't quite last that long, but there are some images up on the web of them occupying the rather small office. But anyway, it sounds like they had a good time. We have met with the DNR as individuals, and they have steadfastly refused to end the timber sale program. They don't offer public comment periods or do environmental analysis of the timber sales on our public state forests, said May Jordan. We feel it is time that we take our state forests back from the timber corporations and the Department of Natural Resources in Indiana, because the wild should exist for itself and not for profit. The activists locked their arms together using piping, and one activist locked her neck to the ring of arms. They said they used these tactics to show the DNR that they meant business and to make it difficult to remove them from the office. This is a first for Indiana, and all the activists left the office at the end of the day with all their gear intact. They'll be back. And genetically modified protesters in England were cleared of obstructing police charges during a demonstration at a test site. The story says the six had faced trial on charges of vandalism and obstruction for destroying crops at the Boghall Farm in Dalkeith, Midlothian, in England, last March at a test site for the Scottish Agricultural College. Unfortunately, they'll have to return to court in August to face charges for vandalism. And here's a request from the folks who are going to produce the deluxe 20th annual anniversary edition of the Earth First Journal. Submit now, they say. The Samhain, or Samhain, depending on how you want to pronounce that. Anyway, that's the Halloween November 1st issue of this year of the Earth First Journal will be the 20th anniversary of the paper. The deluxe issue will include articles from a diverse collection of authors, great photos of people and places, a list of Earth First victories, memorials to fallen places and comrades, top 10 lists, Earth First action records and firsts, Earth First movement timeline, and much more. Be original. Be creative. We want it all. Give us the lowdown. It's your paper. Spread the word. We need info from all the bioregions. Don't be left out. The submission deadline is July 15th. And, of course, earthfirst@igc.org is the place to send it if it's electronic. earthfirst@igc.org, or listen for the address later on. I believe it's P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440, if Uncle Dennis remembers correctly. Earth First Redwood Summer organizers Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney were the victims of a car bombing attack on May 24th, 1990, as they were traveling between organizing meetings and promotional events in Santa Cruz, California. Because of a flaw in the construction of the bomb, both Barry and Cherney survived. A bombing that, according to the FBI bomb expert, was designed to kill them. Judy, however, suffered excruciatingly painful injuries that in many ways crippled her until her death from breast cancer in 1997. They filed a lawsuit against the FBI and the Oakland Police Department for violating their civil rights and for various crimes involving the investigation of the bombing and the framing of Barry and Cherney for bombing themselves. 9 years of frivolous FBI motions have prevented the lawsuit from going to trial so far. Richard Hill Jr., head of the San Francisco FBI office during the time of the bombing and investigation, was thrown out of the lawsuit by Judge Claudia Wilkin in one of these motions. However, on Friday, May 12th, a trial date was finally set, and according to Daryl Cherney, it is now scheduled to be October 1st of the year 2001 in Oakland, California, 11 years and 4 months after the bombing took place. Cherney is gratified that the case will finally go to trial and is happy with the date because it will give the legal time to dispose 50 more FBI agents, timber workers, and other possible witnesses to the murder attempt and smear campaign. According to Cherney, Judy Berry's last request was to not let Richard Held off and don't settle for money. Anyway, you want more information? www.efmedia.org/berry.html. Once again, that's www.efmedia.org/berry.html. I want to thank Andy for that webpage. Here's the news about the Wrightview timber sale. Roseburg BLM announced they will buy back from the Herbert Lumber Company the tree occupied by tree sitters protesting the Wrightview timber sale. They are also purchasing back area around it. Apparently a few acres of trees were saved, or maybe an acre. The protesters have been occupying the timber sale since July of 1999. BLM's buyback decision came on the same day the agency admitted they illegally allowed logging in a protected streamside reserve in another part of the Wrightview sale. Quote, "We made a mistake and we are implementing procedures to ensure that we do not repeat it in the future," said Jay Carlson, Swiftwater field manager of the Roseburg BLM. In a letter written to Umpqua Watersheds Incorporated on May 11th, Jay Carlson said, quote, "It is my conclusion that the Bureau of Land Management improperly conducted the commercial thinning on Unit 1 of the Wrightview timber sale. BLM erred in failing to ensure that the thinning was addressed in a valid consultation with the National Marine Fisheries Service. This situation should not have occurred. The public has a right to expect better from its land management agencies, and I want to apologize for the Bureau's error in this matter. I also want to note that discovery of this error is due in large part to the questions that you posed to me and your diligence on behalf of Umpqua Watersheds Incorporated. Unfortunately, the BLM denies that the error and the buyback, both in the Wrightview timber sale, are connected. Since the BLM hasn't marked the specific trees that will be bought back, a final agreement with the tree sitters has not yet been reached. The sitters are, however, pleased with the BLM's new direction. Peter McAuslin, a friend of the tree sitters from Eugene, Oregon, said, quote, "We are glad that BLM has decided to buy back the occupied tree and its buffer area. Though we lost the forest surrounding the buffer, we have learned a lot, and future tree sits will benefit in our effort to save more forests." However, the tree sitters have declined to come down. They told the BLM they would leave only if the BLM agreed not to cut down the tree they had been sitting in or its buffer. The BLM refused, stating they must honor the contractual obligation and supply Herbert Lumber with the entire contracted volume, but now it's been bought back. And in news from Montana, although their request for a temporary restraining order was denied yesterday in federal court, members of three Montana conservation groups who sought the action say the ruling provides some of the results they were after. The Ecology Center, the Buffalo Field Campaign, and Cold Mountain Cold Rivers filed the temporary restraining order under the Endangered Species Act, asking the judge to restrain the Montana Department of Livestock, the U.S. Forest Service, and the National Park Service from illegally harming threatened bald eagle nests on Horse Butte Peninsula. While Judge Lovell did not see fit to act on our temporary restraining order, the Montana Department of Livestock, the U.S. Forest Service, and the National Park Service fulfilled our main purpose in court when they promised Judge Lovell that bison will not be hazed by using helicopters on Horse Butte Peninsula, said Jim Cofield of the Ecology Center. It's a victory for the eagles nesting on Horse Butte. The judge wrote, "All the defendants agree that no hazing shall be accomplished by helicopter." He goes on to say the defendants represented to the court that there is no intention for future helicopter hazing in the Horse Butte area. The permit says helicopter activities will not be permitted. Simply put, helicopters are prohibited on Horse Butte Peninsula. If you'd like more information, contact Daniel Brister. His number 406 406-646-0070. Once again, that number for Daniel is 406-646-0070. And unfortunately, got room for one more. A whale monitoring organization is calling for an immediate halt to the hunt for gray whales in macaw whale hunt. After a longtime whale researcher, confirmed that a majority of the migrant gray whales have passed, leaving only cows and calf whales and resident whales. Both of those, the macaw, are not supposed to hunt. And that's all the time we have for news and announcements. If you want to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email. Our address, cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio. Our address, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio. We're at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please, please, please send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. Nothing pisses Uncle Dennis off as to get a notice of something that's happening tomorrow or yesterday. If you want more in-depth news or information about the Earth First Movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Here's their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Hey, I got it right. It's Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer, on the World Wide Web. We're at radioforall.net. That's www.radio, followed by the number 4, followed by all.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. You can also try to get on to Free Radio Santa Cruz's streaming live radio server. That's at microradio.net/FRSC. www.microradio.net/FRSC, and we're on the air, of course, from 8 to 10 p.m. Thursday evening Pacific Daylight Time. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to Lone Wolf Circles and Friends off the Oikos CD. This one's called La Selva.
No está abandonada.